Well, hi, and welcome to another episode of the Leadership Enigma. Now, leaders will know that you're about to have five generations potentially working in a single organization. Now, what opportunity does that provide? But also, what challenge does that provide? But I think the exam question for this episode is all about purpose. We hear about purpose all the time. We hear about the importance of organizational purpose, of personal purpose, and how do we align the two? But here's the question: purpose. Is it the great divide, or is it the great connector? And in fact, what has the pandemic done, if anything, to the role of purpose in our lives and in our professional lives? So as always, I've got to speak to someone far wiser than me, and it's someone who's already been a guest. That was episode 75, so I'm delighted. I think it's a good thing that Rochelle has come back to us to have another conversation with us in relation to this topic, because it's a hot topic right now. So come back to me just after this break, where we've got the wonderful Rochelle Foccardi, who's come back to us for a conversation. She's a leading expert on generational diversity. She's passionate about bridging the generational gap. She's a best-selling author. She's a top LinkedIn voice, but she's a guest on the Leadership Enigma. Come back to me just after this. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to the Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Rochelle, you're smiling, which is always a good start. It's lovely to have you back. And we're together for this second go of an episode of the Leadership Enigma. How are you?
Absolutely. I'm doing great. It's always easy to smile when I speak to you.
It's easy, right? It's much easier together.
And it's so nice to be here in person for a change.
Well, I've been keeping a close eye on what you've been doing, because I know you've made the move from Singapore now to London.
Yes, I have.
We could talk about that with the whole family. So you see, you're now ensconced, I think, in South London. And obviously, I've followed your work because you've been passionate and you really have been a leading voice in relation to the generational question. And there are many questions around our generations. But just give a little bit of an introduction yourself to our listeners and our watchers in relation to the work you've been doing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, as you rightfully said at the beginning of this episode,
right.
We do have five generations working together. This hasn't happened before.
Yeah.
And of course, this leads to, you know, a number of challenges and opportunities that companies don't often address the way they should. I think we've been thinking about generational diversity as something that makes the workplace less productive because there's too many mindsets, too many different behaviors, preferences, which obviously can lead to misunderstandings. But in my opinion, generational diversity really is a superpower. It's an incredible competitive advantage for organizations if they're able to leverage on the unique traits and characteristics of each generation and get them to work together effectively. And I think that if organizations can manage to do that, the level of progress that they can see is unprecedented.
I love the fact you've talked about it almost as a superpower, because we talk a lot about diversity of thought, and naturally, if you've got five generations, you're going to get that incredible, rich diversity of thought, aren't you? But I want to know how you got into this field. So tell us a little bit about your background. How, you know, what have you been doing up until this point, and how comes this has been really your subject matter of choice?
Well, this has kind of, you know, become my subject matter of choice, not by choice.
Oh, okay.
In the sense that I kind of stumbled upon this because I myself at some point was a young talent entering the workforce as a Gen X. Especially in Italy at the time, the workforce was very, dominated by the older generations. And so as someone who was new, as someone who came from the U.S. with an American back, you know, university background full of ambition, I had so much that I wanted to be able to do. And I found myself lost in organizations that were predominantly dominated by older generations, where the perception at the time was that if you're young, you really have nothing worth contributing to. And so this is really what got me thinking about how much more I could have been able to do within the organization if there was this idea that as a young person, despite my lack of experience, I still had something to bring to the table. And then because of that, I ended up falling in love with employer branding a few years later when I found out that companies were actually paying to build cultures that attracted the new generations and made them happy and wanted to stay. And while I was helping organizations back in 2005, 2006 with adapting to the need of the millennials, who obviously rose up and started demanding workplace changes, significant ones. They wanted workplaces that were diverse and where they could do what they loved and where they would be treated with respect and feel like paid volunteers. So as I was supporting organizations to move into that transformation and transform their workplace to be more millennial friendly, what I noticed is that organizations fail to do two things. I think they fail to explain to the existing generations why the changes that millennials were demanding were fundamental and had to be acted upon and how that would benefit the entire workforce. And B, I think they failed to explain to millennials that, yes, we are adapting and we are transforming, but you know, you're going to meet four other generations in the workplace who had it very differently. And so, you know, understanding the background, the context of the generations that have been there before you would have really helped, you know, create and foster a much better relationship between generations. Unfortunately, that wasn't done. It was nobody's fault. But that led to some conflicts within the workplace that, unfortunately, in my opinion, really halted progress. And when I noticed this, working with hundreds and hundreds of organizations, I saw that generational conflicts were actually one of the top reasons why people were leaving organizations. And so I decided right then and there that I would try to bridge that divide and I would try to help companies address that and actually foster a workplace where generations would work together effectively, you know, progressively, and drive positive change in the process.
So this is such an important subject to any leader of any sized organization, because we talk very openly about how do you identify and keep great talent.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about the pandemic as well, because that may have changed everything, or it added a very different lens to it. As people are watching and listening, they might be thinking, well, just remind me, what generation do I fall into? So help me with this, Raquel. We'll do this together. So I'll start with the baby boomer generation. And I think we see that between 1946 and 1964.
Correct.
Then we've got Gen X.
Yep.
You put your hand
here
up.
Here I am.
Okay, I'm looking. Born 1965 to 1979, so we can both put our hand up.
1979, 1980, yes.
Okay.
That's about the cutoff.
Around about there. Millennials, which you spoke about, 1980.
81.
1980, 81 to 1994.
1995.
1995. See, that's why I've got you here, right? Generation Z, or Gen Z. So 1995 to 2012.
96 to 2010.
Oh, okay, 96 to 2010. You see, I've got bad information here. And then I've got something called Generation Alpha, but I think I'm going to ignore it.
Yeah, let's ignore it for now. Also, I really do hope that we come up with a better name for it.
So the main ones really are the baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Generation Z.
Yes, then of course you still have traditionalists. I mean, these are people in their 70s. Many are still going strong. And especially when you're looking at boards or executive management, you still find many of them
I've got here that they're called the silent generation. That's an interesting definition, isn't
it? Yes, absolutely. Silent generation. I mean, during the traditionalists, the idea was to be seen and not heard. So and actually the baby boomers was interesting, because what the young generations don't realize is baby boomers were really the first recent generation of revolutionaries and rebels who decided to stand up and roar against the silent generation and come together to change things. So it's interesting, you know, linking back to purpose, how very often the young generations don't understand how purposeful some of the previous generation really have been at some point. But, you know, very often we get caught in the grind, right? And that purpose, we kind of leave it behind. But you mentioned COVID, and I think that did change things.
Yeah, we're going to come on to that for sure. And, you know, the newer generation, I've got two teenagers, Raquel. I know you've got young kids as well. You know, sometimes I talk to them about, not that I knew much about the 60s, the 70s and the 80s, and they look at me as if I'm mad or just positively ancient. But that in itself is fascinating, because now I'm working in an organization where if I'm one of the senior people there, I'm really mindful of the incredible young talent that are coming through, and they do see things differently. They do think differently. And after you can harness that, it's phenomenal.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's so refreshing to be surrounded by fresh perspectives. And it's, you know, so empowering, I think, to be surrounded by knowledge and experience. I think the biggest problem with generations is that they've been in competition. Right. I mean, we see it in politics as well, right? Now we're talking about the workplace here, but there's always this tug of war, right, between the old and the young generations without realizing that, you know, the strength is in working together and that the
that
biggest
cohesiveness.
Yeah, and the most important role that any leader could have is that to pass down their legacy and equip yeah. the younger generations to take on leadership positions. And so the minute that you start to see generations work together and exchange knowledge and grow together, things start to change dramatically. And organizations that provide that opportunity for employees, where you have employees who, you know, explore this collaborative decision making and work in multi-generational teams that are flat and where everybody gets to collaborate yeah. based on their own area of expertise. I mean, these teams are hard to break. I mean, people that
That's
are part of them don't want to go
it?
Back. They don't want to go back to the old way of working.
But that could that be a competitive advantage for an organization that really understands this and harnesses it? That's got to be an advantage, hasn't
it? It's an absolute advantage. I mean, if you think about it, there's no team, no diverse team that can lead to as many coverage of blind spot in decision making as a multi-generational team. I run, you know, leadership development workshops on multi-generational ways of working all the time. And what is interesting is, you know, I look at generations as superheroes, and yeah. I ask, you know, people to explore actually their biases and look at them as superheroes and supervillains. But when you look at generations with the eyes of superheroes, you realize they all have very unique characteristic traits, way of thinking, knowledge, experience, and exposure. And if you bring all these things together, you're pretty much invincible. I like to think of generations almost as the Avengers, right? They're each very unique.
They have watched the film.
You know, each their own weaknesses. They even have their own spin-offs because they have their own story and their own context and their own background, which is important. But when you bring them together and they really work towards a common vision or a common purpose,
yes.
then you can really achieve anything.
Well, we're going to have to work out, aren't we, which Avengers character is which. Which demographic, I don't know. So let's zone in on this question about purpose.
Yes.
And then we'll also talk about the pandemic as well and your research that's hot off the press. So when you're working with organizations, can you help people understand what do we really mean by purpose? Maybe by either organizational or personal. Where do you want to start? Organizational purpose?
Well, I think they're very, very intertwined.
Yes.
I mean, you know, purpose is something that inherently belongs, I think, to the young generations. If we look at history, all the biggest changes have always been brought about
right.
by the young generations who feel the need to change the errors of the past.
Yeah.
And I think for the longest time, especially for baby boomers and Gen X, the workplace was something that you sort of had to suffer through. You know, you had to have a job in order to be financially independent
a
and in order to
passage.
Be able
yeah.
It's a rite of passage. I was never taught that I could that a job was something that I was going to like. As a matter of fact, I remember when I graduated from college, and I was talking to my career counselor, and I remember that she asked me, well, have you thought about what you want to do? And I said, well, I haven't really, you know, put my finger on exactly what's going to make me happy.
Yeah.
And her answer was, make you happy. It's like people that do what they're happy and what they like, they have hobbies, not careers. Right? A job is not supposed to make you happy. And so this was the reality for many of the older generations. So even those of us who were very purposeful,
yeah.
we entered the workplace and, you know, being able to pursue that purpose or being able to be enabled to continue to work with that purpose was really something that, you know, was for the few and far between.
Yeah.
But then what happened with millennials is millennials rose up, and this happened on the tail end of 9/11. It happened on the tail end of the financial crisis, and they decided that was enough. You know, work should be more than just a way to make a living. It should be a way to do what you love. It should be a way to project yourself into the world. And it should be a way to drive positive change. And so this is where companies started talking about corporate social responsibility.
Right.
Right. If we talk about corporate social responsibility and we show young talent that we are investing money in all these charities and towards all these positive causes, we're going to be able to attract these new generations. They will continue to do the work that we want them to do. Do, which is very often not linked to purpose necessarily, but they will be happy because, you know, on their behalf, we are donating money to positive charities and things like that. And that worked for millennials. So millennials were very...
Did they drive that debate? Do you think millennials?
Absolutely. Right. They absolutely drove that debate because, you know, if you think about it, they rose up and they said, okay, you know, I'm a millennial. I watched my parents divorce because my dad was never around. My mom was never around. I grew up pretty much without seeing much of my parents, especially if you look at some Western countries like the US, because they were never around. They didn't really experience much of life. I know my dad was passionate about certain things, but his job made him do the complete opposite or something completely different. They didn't experience life. They didn't travel. They had no holidays. They put all their money aside for retirement. And then the financial crisis hit. You know, all that money was gone. They lost their job. And all of a sudden, they're in their 60s. They're in their 70s. Life is behind them. You know, they have no chance of doing these things anymore. So that's it. So we want to rise up like the baby boomers did before them and make sure that work is something meaningful, both for us as individuals, meaning it allows us to align to our lifestyle and desires, but also something that allows us to give back to society and do something great. And the easy response, I think, for many companies or the kind of lowest hanging fruit was corporate social responsibility initiatives where companies could, you know, donate money or get involved with charities and you know, that's communicate that. And that was fine for millennials, not so fine for Gen Z, but that's okay. A different...
And do you think millennials also took some criticism off the back of this rising up and debate that started in relation
to... They took so much criticism. I mean, I actually remember I was working with hundreds of organizations, Fortune 500 companies in 2005, 2006, and then all throughout the financial crisis.
Yes.
And I remember when I started talking to companies about these millennials, because I was working for an organization that was serving, you know, 150,000 millennials across different countries around the world to understand what they wanted out of their career. And it was shocking to see how different the data that was coming out of millennials who were undergraduate students at the time differed from the data that was coming out of my generation, Gen X. And we were, you know, mostly MBAs and master students at that time. And so I remember I have, as you know, a journalist background. And so when I saw that data, I thought there's so much opportunity to change the world. And I started really advocating and telling this millennial story to companies. And don't get me wrong, there were a lot of organizations that, you know, stepped on it and said, you know what, this is great. This is what the new generations want. This is what we're going to deliver.
Yes.
And you saw that, you know, in many of the consumer goods companies and the Unilevers of the world, but also the JP Morgans.
So there were some early adopters, but there were also some people lagging.
Absolutely, absolutely. You had them.
That's life, isn't it?
And they drove a lot of that movement, the J&Js, the Deloittes, and all these companies. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there were a lot of people that were in it and that we're saying, well, you know what, this is work, and if you're not smart enough or, you know, ambitious enough to want to follow the rules and follow the career
path, remember that in my lifetime those those kinds of mantras existed without
exactly.
a doubt.
I even had people that said, you know, when I would talk to companies and say, you know, well, the young generations want to know, you know, want to be the millennials want to know, for example, what they need to prepare for their interview or, you know, how they're going to change the world by working for you. I literally had people that worked in HR or talent acquisition that would say, well, these are not the people we want. If you need our support to tell you where you should go and look for information to ace our interview, or if you want to come in our organization and find out how many vacation days you have and how purposeful your work is going to be, then you're not who we want. And these are then the companies that called me back 10 years later and said, okay, now we're last on the list of ideal employers. How do we fix it? And by then, of course, it was a bit too late. But one thing that was a common rhetoric or narrative was, well, these millennials and, you know, they want everything. They want everything without earning it. And, you know, they want, you know, life to only come with pleasure. And I specifically remember, Adam, and I remember this so well, like it was yesterday, being at a global advisory board with a number of organizations that said in 2008, well, there's one silver lining that's coming out of the financial crisis. And I said, really, what is it? Well, with all these, you know, millennials losing their jobs or having their internship rescinded, surely they're going to fall off their high horse. They'll realize that it's better to have a job than no job at all. They'll go back to the good old standard way of remaining, you know, kind of corporate slaves and do what they need to do. And instead it had the complete opposite effect.
Right.
And millennials more than ever reinforced their idea through the story that I just told you of, you know, why would I want to do that and give up on my life when fundamentally, you know, you can be thrown to the curb at any moment.
I just wondered, I've heard the term snowflake.
Yeah.
Bandied around in the media. Was that was that aimed at the millennials?
No, Snowflake is predominantly aimed at the Generation Z. Strawberry, Snowflakes is one of them. Crystal Generation, Strawberries for those in Asia, Durian Generation.
Yeah.
But those would be mostly the Gen Zs. And the idea is that they are very easily bruised or they melt down
or
easily.
Or lack of resilience. I've heard that there's a lack of resilience in...
Yes.
You know, and I wonder that. You know, I've got two teenagers and I think, are they as resilient as maybe we had to be? I don't know. So I'm checking my own bias.
So I actually have a very strong opinion.
Come on, about that's this. Why you're here, Rakeli.
So this is actually, and I'm glad you brought resilience up because this is a big, big topic for me. And when I do leadership training, it's one of the biggest causes of generational conflicts in the workplace, especially between older managers and younger talent.
Right.
And the reason for that, and of course, when we look at generations, we need to consider their context. And too often we don't do that. In fact, you know, as we talked about last time, 96% of employees say that they know nothing at all or very little about the context that shaped mindset and behaviors.
So you can't actually live in somebody else's shoes.
You don't understand. Yeah. I mean, the young generations have no idea how hard we had it, or they have no idea that you may have gone 10 years before getting a promotion. So when your eyebrow raises because, you know, they got a promotion 6 months ago and they're already talking about the next one, they think that you're change resistant and want to hold them back. They don't realize that you just have
a
hard time.
Context is very different.
Reconciling that with what you're used to. But, you know, going back to resilience, I think what's really interesting is that, so generations obviously are shaped by large scale events. And one of these kind of large scale event, although it's not really an event, is parenting styles.
Right.
So parenting styles actually strongly define workplace leadership, because the way that we are parented then forms us as leaders.
Apparently we're formed within the first 7 years of our life.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's where the biggest changes happen. And in fact, if you think about baby boomers who do, you know, and are authoritarians as leaders, or were, now they're changing as well, it's not because they chose it, but because that's the experience they had. Their parents were authoritarian. There was one head of the household who was usually the male who made all the decisions, and they would punish you for your own good and all these kind of things. And then, of course, they replicated that in the workplace with a pyramid of bosses and subordinates.
Yes.
But going back to resilience, what I think is really interesting, and I have a lot of conversations about this, especially with leaders in certain countries, Asia as a region being one of them, is in the past, there was this idea that you would build resilience through hardship. So as a parent, as a leader, the more mock situations I created around you that were hard and difficult, more you'd build your bones.
Okay.
So that's where you talk about tough love, right? I'm going to be tough. I'm going to make things super
when
the hard going
gets
for
tough,
you.
The tough get going.
Yeah, and that way you're going to build your bones. Well, what we know now is that if you experience hardship, you either survive or you don't survive. But if you survive, you're not just resilient, you are last with, you know, long life trauma in many cases, right? And this trauma drains energy. So wow, what we do know and is that actually resilience comes from something very different. It doesn't come from hardship, but it comes from psychological safety.
Right.
So the more, you know, supported you are, the safer you feel to express yourself and who you are and make mistakes, you know, and realize that you're a human being in the making and explore yourself and all these things, the more you're able to build solid foundations and retain, you know, sufficient energy to make sure that when life inevitably hits you with that kind of,
you
know,
can
punch
back.
You have the strength, the self-confidence, the self-love, you know, to be able to face that. And I think that is one of the biggest issues that I see between leaders that are older and younger generations, is the young generations come and say, I'm sorry, I don't want to build resilience through being mistreated. I don't want to build resilience through being dismissed. I don't want to build resilience through hardship, you know. And that's why I hear so many stories of managers saying, oh, you know, I had a Gen Z intern who cried. And, you know, for that reason, you start assuming that they're not resilient. Well, they're just simply, I think, more comfortable showing or communicating feelings that we probably all felt when we are dismissed, when somebody's too hard on us, when we don't feel understood, and they have the strength to actually voice it out. And I think that's a good thing. So when I look at Gen Zs, I hate the term strawberry, and I always make sure that everybody commits to never using these terms or snowflake, because in reality, I think with our support, they really have the potential to become one of the most resilient generations we have ever seen.
Right.
And talking about mental health and being so open about what they're feeling is actually, in my opinion, something that requires profound courage, especially when you're confronting yourself with a work or a workplace or a world where, you know, again, you may be discriminated for that or looked down upon as like you're saying, is actually happening in the workplace. So resilience is a big one. Yeah,
I'm fascinated by that because I ask about those labels because it's always fascinating. Where did they originate from?
Yeah.
Where, you know, almost what demographic is labeling another demographic? And it's so interesting to hear just that different context because I'm thinking through my parents and, you know, living through the Second World War and what I was born into, you know, and what I've been through and then what my kids have. It's very, very different.
It's different. But, you know, that's the other thing. I think, and this is one of the biggest issues that I find and that I have in the way that generations look at each other.
Yeah.
You know, recently, I think I mentioned, I saw my mother, who actually is an incredible woman, and she's super open-minded and she's extremely inclusive. So I don't know what came into her, but I think I mentioned this to you. She posted once this, Facebook post that had a picture of an old gentleman in black and white. And then it said, well, this was the generation. And then it had like 50 things about what this generation was amazing for, the generation that knew hardship and knew about relationships and knew how to work hard for what they believe and like all these things. And then at the end it said, well, and kids instead nowadays. And I remember calling her and saying, like, put that stuff out, like take it out, or I'm gonna unfriend you on Facebook for real. Because
your mom.
Yeah, my mom. I was like, I'm gonna unfriend you because this is exactly the type of stuff that, and the type of narrative that I think increases generational divide.
Okay.
You cannot possibly start to understand someone else and what they're going through your own vantage point. And it's very easy to say the Gen Zs, the young generations, they didn't experience World War or whatever. But the reality is, and I think you know this better than anyone, Adam, with the work that you do, that the world has never been as complex as it is right now. I mean, there was an article by the U.S. Surgeon General recently that talked about how, you know, up to 98% of Gen Z say they're depressed. The number of attempted suicide in girl Gen Zs under the age of 18 has increased by 54% in the last 6 months.
Right.
And so when you're confronted with these numbers and when you have people that say, I feel alone, I feel depressed, I have suicidal thoughts, and when those numbers are so high, and then when they mention this in the workplace or at home, they're told, well, look at you, you know, look at me, I didn't have those issues, you're such a strawberry. Well, that must be very disempowering. And so I think that, you know, trying to get ourselves in the mind of what the young generations are going through, what keeps them up at night, what worries them, what fears they have, you know, in relation to themselves, to others, and the world as a whole, I think has a strong power to change those perceptions very strongly.
Now, I've spoken quite openly, and we will at some point release a podcast when my daughter came in, and she very much falls into that younger category. Only at the moment, 19, soon to turn 20, and she talked about how much she struggled during the pandemic and mental health. And actually, she was the gift that keeps giving, because in many ways, it reframed not only how we were viewing her, but how we were viewing that younger generation and the mental health aspect. And it opened up my blinkers as well. I think we all carry certain biases or certain experiences of this what we've been through. So let's talk about the pandemic.
Yeah.
I remember talking to a leader, he was a doctor actually in India, and we were doing a virtual event, and she said, listen, we're all experiencing the storm. She said, but you have to understand we're in very, very different boats. And I thought that was a really precise way of defining that very personalized experience that we were all having.
Yeah.
What did the pandemic do for organizations in relation to purpose? Did it reset people? I sometimes mention this phrase. I heard this phrase from someone that said, when you press the pause button on a computer, it stops. When you press the pause button on a human being, that's when we start to think. And I got the impression that the pandemic pressed the big red pause button on every single one of us.
Absolutely.
Tell us about what the pandemic did to this topic.
Well, I mean, I think the pandemic, without, of course, demeaning, all the difficulties, you know, tragedies and difficulties and so on that it brought about. But from a generational perspective and different generations perspective, I think it's possibly one of the, you know, best things that could have happened to bring different age groups together. And, you know, I think we talked about it earlier, but generations are defined by large scale events. And
yes,
the problem and the reason why generations often don't understand each other is simply because, you know, all these major events that have shaped them were experienced in silos, simply
right,
because we don't live we don't exist at the same time, at the same age,
so
right?
This was a shared experience.
So this was a shared experience. Right. I mean, for the first time, you know, you have, you know, every generation in the workplace, virtually anywhere in the world, experienced the very same large-scale event at the same time.
Yes.
And this is not just, you know, a socioeconomic event. This is something that influences, like you said, everybody on a very deep level. So everything had to
rare.
Be rethought.
When you describe it like that, this is actually hadn't really thought about it that way. That's a rare
occurrence.
It's
very
occurrence,
rare.
Thankfully.
I talk about it as a Halley's Comet, you know, one of those things that
once
happens.
Once every 80-something years.
Yeah, every, you know, even more years. But it was really unprecedented and unexpected because, you know, we all had to confront our demons. We all had to confront our challenges. We all had to confront so many different things. And we all lived that experience together. And so when we looked at the major dividers between generations, you had things like technology, right? That was a big divider. Yeah. The young one adopted, the older generations are resistant to it.
Yep.
Well, now all of a sudden it's forced upon everybody. And actually the boomers are the ones that are the happier with the fact that technology was forced upon them. And that is the... Yeah, and it's what they consider to be one of the silver linings of the pandemic.
Yep.
You know, the other one was, as we talked about now, mental health. I mean, this is something that was completely taboo, you know, prior to the young generations. I mean, as a Gen X, as a, you know, baby boomer, I mean, we grew up with Dorothy Gay of Kansas and Return to Odd, like literally being brought in a mental institution and connected to electricity because she was having nightmares. You didn't want to talk about having mental health issues. It was not something that
was
accepted. It was a big taboo. And now all of a sudden, you know, we all experienced it and we're all comfortable talking about it. The other thing is leadership style, right? We all had to redefine it because, you know, different leaders had a chance to realize and experience themselves difficulties that required flexibility both for themselves and their teams. So even that realigned leadership to, I think, an idea of leadership that works better with every generation and many, many other things. But purpose is a big one. And like you said, you know, the pandemic pushed that red button and it forced all of us to think, right? What are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we here for? What am I going to leave behind? You know, life is so fleeting. And so it was interesting for me because right after the pandemic, in the midst of it, but after the first wave of remote work, I decided to start and launch the 2022 post-pandemic workplace study to understand, you know, how different generations, you know, experienced working together, working during the pandemic, their impact on mental health and work-life balance. And what was amazing was that, you know, in 20 years that I've been working with generations, I always had to mine data to find similarities.
Right.
And this time it was really hard to find differences. So this was really a fantastic moment for me where I started to realize that, you know, different individuals, of course, experience things differently, but it wasn't a generational difference, right? And one of the things that stood out to me the most was the fact that when I asked the different generations, what is the one thing or the one way in which the pandemic changed your relationship to your employer and your career, every generation unanimously agreed that it was realigning whatever it is that they're doing with a greater sense of purpose. And this was just as strong with baby boomers as it was with the Gen Z. And that is the moment where, you know, I felt a huge weight lifted off my shoulders because I saw an opportunity finally after 20 years of doing this for generations to bond in ways that they've never bonded before and for organizations to be able to provide and enable that purpose to get the workforce to work together on bigger and better things that would benefit society ultimately. So it was a great moment for me to see that data. And we definitely owe that to the pandemic.
And you described it earlier that purpose has now become the glue.
Absolutely.
Between all of these demographics since and because of the pandemic.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was recently talking to a extremely inspiring baby boomer I know, and I was sharing with him the data. And I remember that he looked at me when I said, you know, it's interesting because, you know, many boomers or the majority of them actually say that, yes, you know, the pandemic forced them to rethink what they're doing and realign themselves with greater meaning. And he looked at me and said, that's so me. You know, I was such a purposeful child. And if we look at the baby boomers all over the world, you know, the big word that stands out is revolutionaries, right? They fought against institutions and they were the hippies and the Earth Day celebrators and all these things. But then, you know what? They had to... you know, entering the corporate world, and they had to make changes based on what was required at the time, which was become a careerist, infiltrate the organization, sometimes starting as a mail person, right, delivery person, all the way up. And then when you're up, when you're at the vertexes of those companies, then you can drive change. And we see it in so many, you know, incredibly purposeful leaders, from Paul Polman to, you know, Bill Gates and many others. But, you know, what happened, he looked at me and he said, you know, that was me. I was so purposeful. And then I started working and I got caught in the grind. And there wasn't a lot of time for me to think that. But now it was reignited in me more than ever before during the pandemic. And I believe that I am the better equipped right now to actually enable purpose in the young generations coming in, because I get them and I've been there and I've been everywhere in between. And so absolutely, I think that purpose is and will be the glue that is going to bond generations together. And I think this provides a unique opportunity for companies to figure out exactly how to do that.
So let's take the opportunity of looking at some of the research.
Yeah.
I know that we've looked at it and it's very, very thorough. And I'll ask you at the end about how people can connect and maybe get access to and chat to you. Well, Rachele, let's dive into some of the research, which I know is hot off the press. It's voluminous, so I'll talk to you about how we can, how people can access that. But just let's look at some lessons that listeners and watchers can take away. At the moment, if purpose is such a glue for everyone across these demographics, it's something that leaders have really got to take quite seriously. So let's think about what your research said about the sources of purpose, because that might help leaders lock in on some of those.
Yeah,
attributes.
No, absolutely. I think it's super important to look at this. You know, as I mentioned, you know, generations more than ever want their career to be meaningful and purposeful. We find that, you know, sometimes, and this is something that came out from the research, which I thought was quite interesting, is that they find it hard to define purpose, especially the younger generation, interestingly enough.
Okay.
So this is why, you know, I very much believe that there is an incredible opportunity for leaders who have, you know, been in the organization longer, have experienced more, to actually help them, you know, narrate, communicate, identify even purpose. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to understand through the research is, how do people define purpose? And what is it that makes them happy? What gives them meaning at work? And four things in particular stood out.
Yeah,
one of them is helping others.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that whatever it is that you're doing is going to contribute, is going to pay it forward, is going to provide some benefit to someone, whether it's the people that you work with directly, or whether it's your customers, or whether it's your world at large. I had one Gen X who actually said, when the outcome of my work can greatly benefit people, then I can perceive it as meaningful.
That's about positive impact on people.
Positive impact on people. And so this is very important.
Yep.
The second thing as well is being able to make an impact on you know, the bigger world, right? Make an impact on causes that they may feel passionate about, make an impact on societal issues that are obviously keeping a lot of us up at night. So being able to know that whatever it is that you're investing your time in is actually changing things for the better for everybody is something that is extremely important. I was recently running a panel with a Gen Z panel. And it was interesting because it was a panel that we were running in the context of a financial services event. So this was for a bank. And at some point, somebody asked this girl who was 15, 16 years old, actually, what it would take for her to want to work for this bank. And I remember that her answer was I will always remember, because she stood up. She was super convinced, super comfortable in talking to so many executives.
Yeah.
And she said, well, let me turn that question back to you. And, you know, this was the global head of HR that asked it. And, you know, everybody in the room kind of froze. And she said, well, right now, I am, you know, aside from studying, I'm mentoring a startup that aims to reduce the number of death by dysentery in children in the province of India, where my ancestors or family is from.
Right.
So if I drop all that to come work for your bank, how am I going to be able to make an equal or greater impact?
Wow.
And
this is a 15, 16-year-old asking that.
Yes. And it was crickets. Nobody knew what to say. And I think this is the big thing. You know, that's a big way in which I think the Gen Zs are going to change the workplace. We talked about millennials and the workplace revolution, but Gen Zs will definitely drive the purpose revolution. But this now has become critical to everybody. You know, people across all age groups are becoming a lot more concerned with the state of, you know, the world, and they want to make sure that what they do matters. And then the other thing, of course, is growth. Growth is something that is becoming incredibly important. And it's another thing that
personal
was actually,
growth.
Yeah, personal growth. Right. I mean, this was a big divider between generations pre-COVID, because we started talking a lot, because before it was, well, you as a young talent have no experience. Hence, you need to learn because you have nothing to contribute to until you've learned from those with more experience. And then, you know, in the last few years, it shifted to, well, it's the older generations that actually need to learn and upskill themselves, because at the rate at which digital transformation is happening and the world is moving, you know, they're becoming obsolete.
We're the laggards, and it's the younger generation that kind of, I'll show you how to do
that. So now the young generations are whizzing past them, you know, in taking on leadership roles. So if you think about it, this idea of growing has been, you know, very controversial. I only am the one who needs to learn because I'm young, and then now I'm the one who needs to learn because I'm becoming obsolete. But COVID showed us that no matter what generation we belong to, we all need to be lifelong learners, because things are moving too quickly for everybody. And so now this idea of growing has become extremely important for every generation, and especially this idea of growing together has become critical. So you know, I would see tons of responses in the survey of people saying, I want to grow, I want to upskill myself, but I don't want to just, you know, grow by, you know, learning or being part of trainings. I want to learn from others. And so this is fantastic. And then, of course, the idea of being fulfilled in the things that you do, you know, going home and feeling good about yourself, knowing that your job aligns to your values, to, you know, your integrity, that you're not forced to, and this is especially important for millennials and Gen Zs, but that you don't have to trade off what your values are and your integrity is for the good of the greater organization. And then finally, this idea of recognition and appreciation. So people feel they have purpose when whatever it is that they, you know, put their energy into is seen and appreciated. And what I think is interesting here, Adam, that I want to point out is that in the past, people wanted to be recognized and appreciated by their boss, by their organization. So it was almost like a rat race. It was a competition, right? We all need to do our best to get to the top. And now all of a sudden that has changed to a horizontal approach where people say, I want to be recognized and appreciated by my colleagues. Me as a Gen Z, I want to be appreciated by my older colleagues. I want them to know that my social mindedness and my ambition matters. And the older generations want to feel appreciated and recognized by the young generations and hear them say, you know, this experience, this, you know, knowledge and life, you know, that you have built and had over the last years, it contributes, you know, and I want to learn from it to be better. So I think these four things, helping others, making impact, growing and feeling fulfilled, and being recognized and appreciated by one another, is a big contributor to people feeling that their work is meaningful and purposeful, even if they don't work for organizations that are, you know, inherently purposeful, like, you know, medical companies that are aiming to cure cancer or things of that sort.
Gotcha. And it resonates because so many organizations that I'm working with talk about how do they be a force for good. So how do they have an impact on the world beyond their product or service, perhaps, that they're known for?
Yeah.
And I think that's important for all organizations now, large or small. Let's pick another one, because what we're doing is we're whetting the appetite, I hope, of those who are listening and watching in relation to the data. So let me just have a look at some of these. We're going to choose one more between us. Which one would you like to do? Kind of some of the most important causes, the purposeful organization, or the gap?
Well, what do you reckon? I think I can address the gap quickly, and then we can go into what organizations can do. But this is one thing that I think is very, very important, and it's a major call of action.
See, I love this particular statistic.
I know,
right?
And that's something that, you know, should concern, or at least be a wake-up call for most organizations.
Go on, you mentioned that
out
statistic.
There. Well, 42% of employees feel that the only way for them to feel enabled to express purpose in their job is to change employers.
And well, let me just pause there and let that sink in for people. 42% of all of the people you surveyed said in order for them to feel that they were purposeful in their job, they had to leave the job.
Absolutely.
That's a little scary,
across
right?
generations. So this is the sentiment among baby boomers as much as it is among Gen X, as much as it is among millennials and Gen Z. And if you add to that, that 23% of the workforce does not feel that their employer enables them to fulfill their purpose at work, the idea that,
that's a problem.
Changing companies is the only way for you to be able to actually feel like what you're doing matters is extremely concerning. So as organizations are talking about, the great resignation or the silent quitting or, this huge movement that's mm-hmm. going on in turnover or lack of engagement in the workplace, I think this is something to take very seriously. And the second thing, of course, the second way in which they think that they can be enabled to express their purpose in their job is by redirecting their career path.
Internally.
Right. And this is something, and I was just sharing a keynote recently on next-gen career mobility, is something that organizations are often not ready to do, especially when it comes to a multi-generational workforce. There are companies that have set up programs that allow younger talent to explore between different careers and rotate between departments, but those options are often not awarded or there for generations like Gen X. And in fact, my generation is the one that complains the most that, I've been told to become a specialist, and now that I'm a specialist, I'm told that I'm too specialized, and I want to move and do things that are more purposeful within the organization, but, they don't think that I have the experience, or they think that I am too expensive, or, they prefer to hire talent that is younger. And so this is actually a big source of conflict within generations internally, where you have the older generations often feeling that more purposeful jobs or roles are actually limited to the young generations, and that can create some issues. So I think, with that knowledge in mind, being able to understand how to enable purpose in employees, what it means, and also how to make sure that leaders can enable purpose in others, but also offering career paths that allow for people to, take what they've learned through the pandemic, take that desire for change, and actually bring it to their employer and have their employer use it as a catalyst to help them transform their career, for the benefit of the organization as well.
Right. See, when I see that statistic, I wonder whether one of the biggest challenges for many firms is to have far more innovation and creativity and career paths. Because if I think of traditional professional services, it's normally up or out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so there's a challenge for organizations to say, well, hang on, the traditional career path may not actually be attractive to those coming through the system now, or it may not be engaging enough or varied enough.
Absolutely.
In some ways. Absolutely. So what's the, as we bring this to a close, what would be some of the best advice that you would start to give now leaders in their organizations to take advantage of the fact that purpose is now the glue, and in a post-pandemic environment, this is a non-negotiable?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think we need to talk about it. And I think organizations need to realize that, CSR is no longer going to cut it.
Not the tick box.
No. I think, a lot of people, and it used to be the younger generations and now the older ones as well, really just do see that as greenwashing. So I think, being able to articulate exactly how it is that your company or your organization is committed to something bigger than itself. And of course, we're hearing a lot about sustainable profitability, but really aligning themselves to causes that are meaningful is going to be critical.
It's okay to make a profit. Let's just say it's right?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the thing, just a quick anecdote here. I was running a project, and this was a long time ago. So things have changed since then. This was about, 13, 14 years ago. But I was running a workshop with a bank again. And I remember the CEO of the bank in that particular part of the world was in the room. And we were talking about how the new generations were talking about purpose. And we were having a workshop to define purpose, to be able to develop an EVP. And at some point, I could tell he was getting frustrated. And he got up and, pretty aggressively said, well, I don't understand why we're sitting here for 2 hours wasting our time defining purpose. Purpose should be very clear. We're a bank. Our purpose is to make money. And, unfortunately, this has been the mindset, for a long time. And this is a mindset that no longer works. You can make money. And of course, we want to, we want to stay true to who we are as an organization and what we are meant to do. And
you've got to be sustainable
and sustainable
to provide people a living.
But I think that, corporate citizenship is important. And this is what talent is saying companies need to do to show their genuine commitment towards driving impact beyond profitability is supporting and participating, for example, in non-for-profit organizations, finding ways to help the less fortunate or aligning themselves towards some, of the, UN Sustainable Development Goals and really working towards contributing to those in a very significant ways. And we see companies doing that. So I think, first of all, companies need to realize that, profit is great, but, we are entering the time of
profit
sustainable
for purpose.
Profitability. The second thing is purpose is becoming important. And if people don't feel that what they do is meaningful, they're going to leave your your organization and they're going to go somewhere else. Right. And then all of a sudden, you're going to have a whole other set of issues when you have, you know, very purpose-driven, enabled former employees that are working for your competitors. Gotcha. The third thing is, you know, the meaning of purpose has changed. And I don't think that leaders have been trained to, you know, identify purpose in themselves and enable purpose in others. As a matter of fact, when I run workshops, one of them is the Ikigai, is getting older generations to, you know, explore what their meaning is and what gives their work purpose. And for the first hour, it's usually really difficult because they realize these are questions they haven't asked themselves in a very long time. But when they get themselves thinking, they do reconnect with it. And so being able to drive that mindset shift and being able to ensure that leaders reconnect with their own sense of purpose is the only way to ensure that they can enable purpose in others and come up with a shared purpose and a shared vision that can, of course, benefit the company. Okay. The other thing is ethics and transparency. I mean, this is something that generations, especially the younger generations now, will no longer negotiate with or close an eye to. So being, you know, ethical practices, commitment to doing things the right way is important. Diversity, equity, and inclusion is huge.
Yes.
And they don't want it to just be a box that you tick, but they want to make sure that as an organization, you understand the value and the super strength that comes from bringing different perspectives together. And the third is what we talked about. The last one, the fourth is employee well-being, which is what we talked about earlier. Care about the people that you, you know, that work with you and for you. Treat employees with respect. And take pride in your employees, because at the end of the day, they are your biggest ambassadors. And there's many things that companies can do, and maybe we can talk about this, you know, another time. But even for those who haven't quite figured it out, there are ways to enable purpose in employees. And the number one way to do that is ask the question and listen. You know, you can go to a group of interns and say, listen, you know, we may not have a huge program right now that we can put you into, but what are you passionate about? What keeps you up at night? And then get them to work on something that is meaningful to them. You will find that they are willing to work on it after hours. And in fact, in the survey, another big finding was that employees really want to be able to work on projects that align with the causes they're passionate about, and they're willing to work on that outside of work hours. So if you just give them an opportunity to do what they love, they will go above and beyond, and they will put a lot of extra time to do that. And one of the biggest reasons why employees are unhappy is because they feel that they have no control over the projects that they work with. So give them some control. Give them the opportunity to work on things that matter. And maybe together you can co-create ways you know, that can allow for that to happen, even without having, you know, incredibly huge initiatives or programs.
Tapping into that discretionary effort. And this really reminds me of when I had four young leaders, voices of future leaders, in this very studio, actually. And they were speaking very passionately about personalized leadership and the requirement for their voice to be heard, which is exactly what you're talking about. So in summary, what I'm hearing is that the pandemic has provided us with an opportunity to see purpose as a glue across all of the demographics, which perhaps was not there pre-pandemic.
So this, it was dormant.
It was dormant. That's a better way of describing it.
It was
so
dormant.
This may actually be one of the best and most opportune moments for organizations to really get this right.
Absolutely. I think we've all been through the workplace revolution, and we've all been benefiting from it, thanks to millennials in particular. And I think now is the time of the purpose revolution. And, you know, I think it's even more powerful. And so if we can really find a way to leverage purpose, yep, as a glue to bind generations, we can definitely see progress that we haven't seen before.
Now, you're doing a huge amount of work in this area. There's a huge amount of data. We have literally scratched the surface. How do people get in touch, carry on the conversation, get you involved, get access to the data? What's the best way?
Well, the best way is, you know, obviously always LinkedIn. I'm very, very active on LinkedIn, and I'm happy to connect with anyone.
One of the top LinkedIn voices, can I just say.
I put out a lot of content, and there's a lot of wonderful new stuff, including what Gen Z leaders are going to look like and many other new things. Also through my website, www.xyzatwork.com. And there you can actually download the PDF of the infographic.
Great.
With this new research, as well as the previous research, the post-pandemic workplace study and the multi-generational workplace study. And obviously find this, episode also.
I hope it will be out. I hope this will be proudly on your website as well. So what I'll do is I'll put all of those in the show notes as well so that people can see that and they can click straight through to it. And I just want to say a massive thank you for battling the traffic and coming and spending some time with
it's
us in the studio of
so
the Leadership.
Well worth it.
See how much we've checked. Look, 75 episodes, I think. You were here episode 75, and now I think you're going to be episode like 170. So it's a slight difference.
Talk about a purpose-driven guy.
There
right?
we go, right? Hopefully we're trying to add value to anyone and everyone. Thank you so much for taking time to come in.
Thank you so much, Adam. It was a pleasure.
Take great care. Thank you. Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.